Hey there, good afternoon to you. Welcome to Thursday's Richie Allen Radio Show, broadcasting live, as usual, from the heart of Salford City. I'm Richie Allen. You can join in, comment, if you will, via the app for the programme or via richieallen.co.uk. It's always an absolute treat to chat with you.
Uncensored, unfiltered, you're listening to Richie Allen on the world's most popular independent news radio show.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yeah, it's been another gorgeous day here in the northwest of the UK. Dean Henderson, there's a guy, has been speaking with me for over 10 years now on a variety of radio and television programmes. Wonderful man. One-time political candidate, author, shaman, broadcaster, researcher. He's done it all, Dean. Dean will join us live from the Ozarks in around about 45 minutes' time for an extended conversation. Don't miss Dean. And as usual, if you'd like to join in, do so. I've already let you know how you can do it. I've already told you. You all right, Jar? Yeah, I'm all right. It's good. Good old day. Warm it's getting. It's warm it's getting, I tell you. Let's have a chat then about one or two of the things making the news today. This interested me. I'm not a techie. I don't know. I'm not a techie. I have technical things, but I'm not a techie. Hugh Grant is in the news this afternoon. He has accused Apple, the tech giant, makes the iPhones and the iPads and the iMacs. Yes, he's accused Apple of, quote, the destruction of the human experience. Why? Well, there's been a backlash because Apple has launched a new iPad. An iPad. Yes, people are still using them. Interestingly enough, iPads only account for about 6% or 9%, depending on who you believe, 6 to 9% of Apple's overall sales. But they're still producing them. And they've made an ad for their latest iPad. And the ad portrays pianos, guitars and sculptures being squashed by an industrial press. And why, you might ask? Well, it's a reference to the thinness of the new models of iPad. They're so thin, you can barely even see that there is a width, that there is a width dimension. So anyway, this has been controversial. So a number of people have even called it dystopian. The ad was posted by Tim Cook. He's the man at Apple these days. He put it up on Twitter and he was hammered with thousands of negative responses, including one from Hugh Grant. The destruction of the human experience courtesy of Silicon Valley. I get over yourself. Although, yeah, it's a bit weird. Why would you do that? Authors, designers, artists and musicians have joined in. Dystopian, as I said, some are calling it. Very interesting, isn't it? I suppose all the more interesting because back in 1984, Apple produced a very famous ad, didn't it, where Apple placed itself in the marketplace as the anti-establishment product. You remember, it made an ad back in 1984, which was kind of having a go at IBM, claiming that IBM was the establishment. It was dark, it was dreary, it was horrible. And Apple was full of colours and life and imagination. But their new ad portrays all of these wonderful things, musical instruments and sculptures being crushed to show the thinness of the new model. Hugh Grant isn't happy. And if Hugh Grant is not happy, I'm not happy. Here's a WOW moment, maybe, maybe not. You know Trinity College in Dublin, you do, which, amongst other things, Trinity, is home to the Book of Kells. The wonderful Book of Kells. Well, Trinity College has given in, has yielded even, to demands from students that the university cuts all ties with Israeli companies that are active in occupied Palestinian territories. And Trinity has said, okay, please go back to classes, we give in. So pro-Palestinian students had been camped at Trinity for the best part of a week, demanding the college or uni, it's a college, it's a uni, it's a biscuit, it's a bar. They said, we want you to divest away from Israel because of what's going on in Gaza. Yes, a similar protest to those going on at Oxford and Cambridge and in America and elsewhere in Europe. And because of these protests, the public were not able to go and see the famous Book of Kells. and Trinity is losing money because of this. So, because it's been issuing refunds to people who had bought a ticket to see the Book of Kells. You've got to do everything online now. You can't just rock up on the day. Get the number 52 bus from O'Connell Bridge. I have no idea if it is the 52 bus. It could be the number 27A bus. I have no idea. Jean Ann would know. So you come from O'Connell Bridge into Trinity. I've got a fiver on me. No, no, you've got to do it all online now. And your ticket will be downloaded to your phone, to your wallet. It's madness, isn't it? I'm going to a gig on Saturday with herself. And the tickets are paperless. And they will be forevermore, apparently. So yeah, so people couldn't go and see the Book of Kells. Trinity has capitulated, refunded money to people who had bought tickets and said to the students, okay, yeah. And wait for it. Trinity has also waived fines, or a fine, of more than £170,000, which the college had imposed on the students' union for previous protests. Would you believe it? So as part of this deal that Trinity has made with the students, we will waive the £170,000 fine we imposed on you. We will agree to boycott and to not do any business with Israeli companies which operate in the occupied territories and just go back to classes now, will you, scruffy bastards? And that's what's going to happen. The blockade is over. I'm sure this will only embolden the protesters at the UK universities, won't it? Surely. I mean, surely, don't call me surely. I imagine it would. And Trinity said by next month, we will divest from three Israeli companies listed by the UN as being active in occupied Palestinian territory. Owing to contractual reasons, however, we will keep ties with one other Israeli company until next March. And Trinity will reserve 8 free places for students from Gaza to continue their education, which will piss off the far right in Ireland. We have enough migrants coming here. Are you not listening to us? There is no far right. So we'll take a few students as well, says Trinity. Well done. The Israeli entry for the Eurovision Song Contest, which is taking place in Sweden, booed during rehearsals by pro-Palestinian activists. I cannot remember the name of the Israeli woman who's going to sing for Israel this coming weekend. Can't remember her. I could have copied and pasted from Google, but I didn't. They booed her and they cheered that freak representing Ireland. Have you seen that thing? I'm queer and I'm a witch. The second word is off, you know. Anyway. So two students, this made me laugh too. It's all a laugh today. Two students were expelled from a Catholic private school for blacking up. For blacking up blackface. You're not allowed to wear black paint on your face if you're a white person for any reason whatsoever. It's undoubtedly racism, apparently. You couldn't go to a fancy dress competition as Ray Charles because, well, what would you do? How would you, if you wanted to go as Ray Charles, what would you do? Right, you can't black up, apparently. These students were kicked out, they were expelled. This is St. Francis High School in Mountain View, San Francisco, where you pay $27,000 a year to send the little bollocks to this particular private school. But some of the parents of the other children became alarmed when they saw a video of three students all blacked up. They said they have to be expelled. It's outrageous. It's racism. Turned out they were wearing an acne face mask, the three lads. They were wearing an acne face mask. And this is how wokery, this is one example of how utterly insane wokery is. That when these lads said, look, it's actually an acne face mask, and we're doing a TikTok thing, like, because we have acne and we don't want to be ashamed of having acne. Now, I was very lucky. I wasn't bestowed with many other beautiful characteristics. I was an ordinary looking old fecker when I went to school, but I never had the acne thing. I was very lucky. Beautiful skin, the BBG. Beautiful skin. But these lads were saying, look, acne is not the end of the world. We've got this treatment. We're wearing it. And they were booted out of the school. And for being complete woke wankers, let's say wankers, they've had to pay $1 million to the families of these three young lads for not simply listening to their explanation and saying, ah, right, yeah, so it's an acne mask you're wearing and you're not playing a racist joke on the internet. Fair enough. 10 minutes past the hour. Let's go back to Israel for a moment and the protests at the universities. I don't know if you listen to the papers podcast. It's downloaded or downloadable, if you can say that, Monday to Friday, around about 7:30 a.m. Vice chancellors from a number of unis in the UK were invited or summoned, depending on who you believe, to a meeting with Rishi Sunak at Downing Street today to discuss anti-Semitism on campuses and keeping Jewish students safe. I wasn't joking when I compared this morning to inviting all of the UK's park rangers to Downing Street to discuss how to keep tourists safe from polar bears in the UK. There is no anti-Semitism on campuses and Jewish students are as safe as anybody else. This is bollocks, right? So Sunak said universities should remain bastions of tolerance. No, they fucking shouldn't. No, they shouldn't. Universities should be places where you go and your ideas, your ideologies, your worldviews should be, you should expect them to be scrutinised to the nth degree. Not bastions of fucking tolerance. No. And I don't mean you should be allowed to walk around a university shouting at somebody, calling him a Yiddo, or calling him the N-word. Why don't we say nigger? The word is nigger. Or calling him something else, right? No, of course not. But not bastions of tolerance. Your ideas should be up for grabs on unis. Anyway. So he called these vice chancellors, Sunak. He said, right, you got to do something about something that isn't happening. And they went, right, we will, we swear. We'll stop the anti-Semitism. And this is because of these student encampments, which are completely peaceful. Absolutely. There have been no arrests in the UK. They're just camped out, as were the students at Trinity. And they're saying, can you stop killing babies in Gaza, please? Or can you at least not do business with companies profiting from the occupied territories? Or can you not do business with the Israeli government? That's all we're asking. There's no anti-Semitism in that. Edward Isaacs, though, he disagrees. He's a little Jewish lad and the current president of the Union of Jewish Students. Hysterical little prick, wait till you hear him. He was on Sky and he was allowed in to listen to Sunak's discussions with the vice chancellor. The president of the Union of Jewish Students, his name is Edward Isaacs, if I can find the fecker. Here he is.
Listen, the Prime Minister was very clear that anti-Semitism has no place on campuses.
There's no anti-Semitism on campuses.
For the last 7 months, Jewish students have endured a torrent of abuse, of anti-Semitic hatred on campus.
Bollocks, there's no evidence of this. No evidence that Jewish students have endured a torrent of abuse on campus. None. Zilch. There is no evidence. There have been no arrests. No complaints. Very few complaints to the police. And a lot of Jewish kids are involved in the protests.
Jewish students have received death threats. Jewish students...
Bollocks.
...have been victims of physical assault.
Bollocks.
And so much more. And universities need to be places where Jewish students are included like every other student.
But they are, though.
But sadly, that's not the case right now.
It is.
Considering the backdrop you've just described...
The presenter is a world-class dickhead who used to be a celebrity farmer. His name is Gareth something or other. He's a gay kid. He's very proud of being gay. Very pretty, it must be said, to look at. He's been presenting with Kay Burley on Sky's breakfast programme of late. He's not a journalist. He's a celebrity, but he's on Sky and he doesn't have the balls to ask Edward Isaacs, what about all of those Jewish students that are participating in the protest? He doesn't ask him because he's a coward.
How supported, how hopeful do you feel as a result of the conversations you've just been part of?
How hopeful are you that the universities will stop the thing you say needs to be stopped, even though it isn't happening?
I'm very grateful that Vice Chancellors took the time to come to Downing Street today, but ultimately we need to see any commitments made today followed by swift action. Jewish students need to see action, and it's only decisive action by vice-chancellors to ensure that Jewish students are included in campus life that will ensure that Jewish students have a future on campus.
And this is not unique to Jewish people. It's not unique to anybody. What he really wants to see happen, and this is a virus that is infesting the young, not Jewish young, not Muslim young, not Christian young, every young identity group is infested with this. What he really wants to happen is He wants those who disagree with him and who say things he doesn't like, he wants them destroyed. That's what's happening to the young of this country, my country back home, and every country in the world. They are being seduced into this mad paradigm, this crazy place where it's okay to try to destroy people because they see things a bit differently than you do. This will make you laugh. He has a colleague, does Edward Isaacs, from the Union of Jewish Students. Her name is Emily. She's a mad woman. She was on LBC Radio and she was asked about anti-Semitism. Her answer is hilarious.
So I graduated university last year. I've spent the last year working at the Union of Jewish Students. I was very lucky in that I never experienced direct anti-Semitism.
Hasn't experienced direct anti-Semitism. Well, that's nice.
But I did have various elements that made it uncomfortable for me to be Jewish.
Elements? Made it uncomfortable for you to be a Jew? Well, tell us.
Things such as, you know, the kind of small things I think we'd refer to as microaggressions.
Microaggressions. She's experienced microaggressions. Microaggressions, or claiming that you've experienced microaggressions, is a form of mental illness. It is a deep-rooted, deep-seated paranoia. Watching everybody in your immediate vicinity, imagining that they don't like you, imagining that they've got something against you, even though they're not looking at you and they're not speaking to you. But she has some examples of the microaggressions, Emily.
You know, people asking me, how come I knew so many Christmas songs?
Oh, they should be fucking expelled. People asking you how you know so many Christmas songs?
Or straight away asking me, you know, what's your opinion on what's going on in Israel and Gaza?
How dare they ask you, what's your opinion about what's going on in Gaza?
And even less innocuous things such as I used to play rugby.
Used to play rugby?
And they moved one of our rugby training sessions to Saturday mornings.
Wow, they moved the training to Saturday morning. Most training sessions in most sports take place on Saturdays. Most do, with games taking place on Sundays. I looked it up. But of course, Saturday is...
And I'm quite religious, which meant that it's the Jewish Sabbath and I could not join in. And I had to stop playing rugby because I was missing 50% of our training session.
Oh, she had to stop playing rugby because they trained on the Sabbath. And this is the narcissism, you see, again, that's rampant among the young. But I imagine quite a few of your teammates, maybe Christians, maybe, Emily, maybe. And maybe they might attend a worship, a service on a Sunday. What about them? They don't matter. Me. 17.5 minutes past the hour. People need to divest themselves. Divest is a popular word today. Of their identities, don't they? Roll their identity up into a fucking ball and then kick it as far away from them as they possibly can. Your identity, as David Icke has said a million times in his life, is a program, isn't it? It's a downloadable program. It is a pigeonhole. It is a trap where you are meant... Stop, we've done it too many times before. You know exactly what I mean. Divest yourself of your identity as a Jewish... Well, you're not Jewish. You choose to be. No more than you choose to be a Christian. That's something you choose to be. I'm not saying whether God exists or doesn't exist. It's none of my business, I have no idea. I'm an agnostic. But you make a conscious decision. First and foremost, you are a human being. Madness, these people are crazy. But there's been a few giggles today around this whole area of Palestine and Gaza and the Eurovision Song Contest. This is bizarre. It was even more bizarre on BBC Two, Politics Live, a panel programme, Monday to Friday, with various invited guests, mostly political, but sometimes celebrity-ish. So they had a debate about whether Israel should be kicked out of the Eurovision Song Contest in Sweden. Should Israel be kicked out because of what is going on in Gaza? If it was good enough for the Russians, Russia was kicked out in 2022, wasn't Russia, of the Eurovision. And Russian athletes have been told, well, you can compete at certain competitions, but not under the banner, the Russian flag. You've got to be wearing neutral colours or whatever. So... should Israel be booted out of the Eurovision Song Contest? The BBC invited drag queen Crystal, I swear to God, drag queen Crystal and a journalist called Nicole Lampert. And this was great gas. Think identity politics now. Let's hear the drag queen, who sadly, is on our side. Maybe not ours. I don't know how you feel about it. I'm sure I've got listeners who maybe are more sympathetic to Israel, maybe than I think. But Crystal is on our side. I kind of wish he, as a drag queen, wasn't. Have a listen.
Eurovision has and always will be intrinsically tied to politics. And we've seen that with Russia being justifiably kicked out of the competition in 2022 when they invaded Ukraine. And when Ukraine won in the year that they were invaded as well, you know, politics are intrinsically linked. What we're seeing in Palestine is horrible to witness, and I think is, you know, justification alone for the removal of Israel from the competition. And we're seeing calls from multiple countries, thousands of artists signing letters asking for Israel to be removed. And because that hasn't happened, unfortunately, we've decided to join a boycott.
Nicole?
Hi, thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
I find it quite ironic that the West LGBTQ plus community is marching in lockstep with Iran and its proxy Hamas. Iran and Hamas both ban gays and treat women abominably. So that is part of the reason why I think it's, you know, there's this kind of irony that they are together. If we come on to Russia and Ukraine, then in this, if we're going to kind of equate this in any way, then Israel is like Ukraine. Israel was the one that was invaded by Hamas. 1,200 people were killed. And as I'm sure you all know, there's still 130 Israelis still being kept hostage in Gaza. What we're seeing in Gaza is horrendous. This is the fault of Hamas, which started this war, and which also hides beneath its own civilians and uses them as human shields.
Yeah, so Nicole rolled out the old chestnut that Hamas uses people as human shields. All that old bollocks, right? It's the fault of Hamas. And I cannot believe, said Nicole, that the LGBTQ++ community would throw its lot in with Hamas and Iran, because we know how they feel about gays and women. So Crystal had to think about it for a moment. The drag queen came back, and this made me laugh for some reason.
You know, I would just go back to Nicole's first point, which is just real textbook pinkwashing.
Pinkwashing.
I refuse as a queer person to let my beloved cultural institutions be...
What? He refuses as a queer person to let his beloved cultural institutions what?
I refuse as a queer person to let my beloved cultural institutions be used as cover for genocide. And the idea that... Palestinian queer rights in Palestine or women's rights in Palestine are going to emerge from a bombing campaign is really laughable. You know,
that's a good point, that. We can't bomb the Palestinians into accepting queer lives and LGBTQ++ people. Good point.
Those issues need to come from Palestinians themselves. And I think it's disingenuous to say that, you know, queer rights matter more than the lives of babies who are being bombed right now. You know, my queer politics do not put life over the ability for same-sex marriage, for example. And I think
his queer politics doesn't prioritize life in Gaza over the rights of same-sex couples in Gaza. Amazing.
I think those calls it's really just pinkwashing at its finest, and I don't see Eurovision being used in that regard.
That's what the BBC has been reduced to now. Let's get Crystal on, a drag queen, to talk about whether we should kick the Israelis out of the Eurovision or not. As the time is 24 minutes past, I suppose it's better than sending Crystal into a primary school to read bedtime stories to children. I suppose that's a bit cheap. Maybe it is. It's 24 minutes past the hour. You're listening to The Richie Allen Show. Dean Henderson is my guest. Is he? Will be my guest a little bit later on this hour. Lots of your comments coming in. Thank you for them. I'll get to them in a moment. You can leave a message via richieallen.co.uk or the app for the programme. Download the app. When you send a message, it arrives instantaneously. Imagine that school putting the rugby training on Saturday morning. The poor Jewish princess cannot play anymore. That's proper anti-Semitism, that. Jesus! Peter says, Richie, absolutely cracking paving stones in Blackpool. It would be rude not to in this weather, says Peter. He's in Blackpool. He's having a pint. Hello. Hello to Ian, who says, Richie, who is the hidden enemy? Who is the far right in the UK? Why is the media going crazy about hidden threats to Jews? It's identity politics, Ian. It's culture war bullshit, isn't it? It's divide and conquer. It's age old. It's not sophisticated. It isn't very difficult to understand. While they go about the agendas will distract them and will get them killing each other over their identities. And it works. It's amazing. Hi to Paul Costello. Thank you, Paul. He's in Sligo. Lovely to hear from you, Paul. Hi to Pedro. Yes. Well, you don't do it gratuitously. I did use the word N-I-G-G-E-R, but I don't use it gratuitously. I use it to make a point. It is foolish and embarrassing to say the N-word because the word is nigger. It's a nasty word. Of course it is. But like any other word, it can be used in context, I would argue, and I have argued before. Ian says, a different Ian, I am gay myself. I can't say that, Ian. Neil says, Richie, these college protests do not seem to be grassroots, at least not in America. All of the tents erected on the campuses are very similar. Where did they buy them all? Were they provided? It might be a psyop in order to move legislation forward, which will restrict or remove freedom of speech. Neil, you might be right. I don't know. I'd like to believe that the anti-Israeli genocide protests are grassroots and genuine. I'd like to believe it, but I'm open-minded. Like yourself, it could be that these things sometimes start out naturally, but then they are co-opted. We've seen this over the years. The Occupy movement was completely co-opted by certain special interest groups who want to steer them in certain ways. Hi to Patricia. Good evening, Patricia. In my opinion, this Jewish crap about anti-Semitism has become boring and it's lost any credibility. I would agree 100%. Patricia is right. Doesn't stop them or prevent them from rolling it out time and time again. You're anti-Semitic. Anti-Semitism on campus. There isn't. I can say this. You have every right to say to me, what do you know, Richie? You are no longer attending a university campus in the UK. And I would say you're absolutely bang on. But I am in regular contact with a variety of men and women who work in different capacities at universities right across this country. People who've come on the show over the years, people who are currently lecturing at unis, people who used to lecture at these unis, deans of various colleges. I have a lot of contacts. There is no anti-Semitism. What annoys Zionist little monsters, little Muppets like Edward Isaacs, what annoys him is that these students are allowed to say what it is they want to say and he can't stop them. That's what really pisses them off. We saw this with the Richie Allen Show back in 2019, it was, when I moved here. And that big blow up for a week when I said I was sick to death of hearing about the Holocaust. I did a rant, didn't I, about every second film, which was bullshit. But of course you can bullshit in a rant, you can exaggerate. I said every time I turn around there's a new film about the Holocaust. I'm sick of it. We get it. 'Twas horrible what went on in Nazi Germany. Do you not think it was horrible in Cambodia, in Laos, in Vietnam? Do you know how many people were killed in Vietnam? 4 fucking million people were killed. Right? And we got Missing in Action in Rambo 2 and that was the fucking end of it. Thank God. Enough of it. I'd say the same if every 10 minutes there was a film about Vietnam and how the poor Vietnamese. Yes, we get it. It's relentless. There's one out at the moment now, the tattooist of Auschwitz. Give me a break. We know. We get it. How many more fucking times do you have to tell us what went on in the 1930s and 40s? We know. It's relentless, isn't it? Every year. And you know there's something wrong with that. That's not natural that so many production companies. Now, if you could show me that there was some financial reason for that, if you could show me that these films were hugely successful, I would say, fair enough then. follow the money. It isn't the case. How do you know that, Richie? Because I've researched it. It's very easy to get the box office information for any film, whether it be Rambo 4 or whatever, right? Couldn't think of a more recent film than Rambo 4. These films are not commercially viable, many of them. Why? Because people are not going to continue to go to the feckin' cinema to watch a bleak movie. Jewish people in fucking black and white striped pyjamas getting abused by guards in jackboots. We know. We know. Anyway, back in 2019, I did it deliberately. I knew it would cause a furore. Sure, they did everything to try and get me off the air. Everything. Every newspaper in the country covered it. At the time, they went to Fab Radio. They tried to find out who was streaming the programme. They did find out who was streaming the programme. They asked my streaming company to disown me and to delete me, and they said no. They were in California. They were great. Jewish people, ironically. They said, no fucking way are we going to delete him. Free speech. The Second Amendment. The First Amendment. The First Amendment, you big baldy galoot. The First Amendment, free speech. They said, no. Not to mention, we don't think he really is anti-Semitic, but we're not going to delete him. And that's how it panned out at the time. Patricia's right, it's boring, but they carry on with it. We had the lovely gentleman Andrew Barr on the programme, the historian who happens to be Jewish, and he's doing as much as he can to take on the lobby groups who try to silence people through accusations of anti-Semitism. It's, yeah, Jewish students are in no danger on UK campuses. They can ignore the tents that have been erected on the various greens. They can go about their business, or they can debate them, or they can do the right thing, which is to join them and say, sure, this has got nothing to do with Jewishness or Judaism. This is a Zionist lunatic cabal which has always desired the complete wiping out of the Palestinian people. But sure, we know it's got nothing to do with us, so let's join in. 27 minutes and a half minutes to the top of the hour. Yeah. Yeah. Don't say that. I'm sick to death of hearing about the Holocaust. Don't say it. Well, do say it if you want. But if you don't want any grief, don't say it. And it isn't just the tattooist of Auschwitz. There's another one on another streaming service. Another multi-part drama about the Holocaust. Yeah. No thank you. We need to start making films about the famine, but films that attempt to tell the truth about the famine, that the Irish weren't a bunch of fucking retards who were only able to grow potatoes, you know, a bunch of fucking leprechauns. That's all they were. The potato crop failed and the Irish starved to death and they swam to America. That's the official narrative. In reality, of course, it's completely different. Is there any money in that, making a film? I must ask Hayden. Let's make a film, Hayden, where we go back, we talk about what was going on, how everything that you could eat in this country, I'm not in Ireland now. Have I been telling you lies all along? Am I ensconced in Ireland? I'm in Salford. Everything that could be eaten, that could be tied down, was sent off to the colonies, to the garrisons of Britain. That's what happened. Lots to tell you about before Dean comes on. So I better shut up and tell you. That's an oxymoron. Ireland wants to join Spain, Slovenia and Malta in recognising the state of Palestine. Here's Simon Harris, the Irish Taoiseach. Less said about him, the better, but here he is.
There is never a wrong time to do the right thing. And the right thing to do right now is to recognise the state of Palestine. Why do we do that? We do that because we must keep the hope and the destination of a two-state solution firmly to the fore. That is how you resolve this conflict in the Middle East. That is how you bring stability to the region. You cannot say you believe in a two-state solution and not recognise that there are two states. Ireland recognises, of course, the state of Israel, its right to security, to peace, and Ireland wishes to recognise the state of Palestine and wishes to see those two states live side by side.
Now, let's leave that for a minute. And let's talk about the AZ job. I can't believe I missed this yesterday, but I can bring it to you today. Talk radio. Ian Collins is back in the afternoons on Talk Radio. I don't know why I'm advertising this. They're not giving me any money, but I don't imagine you're going to go running to listen to it anytime soon. But Ian Collins, he's not the worst bloke in the world, Ian Collins. I don't think he is anyway. Isabel Oakeshott is a reporter for Talk Radio. She also does quite a bit for GB News. She is the current squeeze. Here's a bit of misogyny. She's the current squeeze of your man Richard Tice from the Reform Party. Is it Reform? Is that... It is Reform, isn't it? Yeah, Reform, yeah. She's his squeeze. I do ramble. I had to think about it for a minute. Is it Reform? It is Reform, yeah. Now, to give Oakeshott her due, and I know, she can be odious, but Oakeshott, to her credit, throughout 2021, stood up against she stood against any suggestion that the COVID jabs should be mandatory. Fair play to her at the time, whatever you might think about her. Okay, here she was talking. They were just kind of loosely talking about the fact that the AZ jab has been withdrawn permanently. Isabel Oakeshott in conversation with Ian Collins.
I'm going to start by saying I had the jab. In fact, I had 3 jabs. And I regret it. And I had it for...
Why did she have the jabs?
For all the wrong reasons, but they were the right reasons at the time.
Sure.
I had it because I wanted to be able to criticise government vaccine policy.
That's weird, isn't it? I had 3 jabs so I could criticise government vaccine policy.
Without being labelled an anti-vaxxer.
Jesus, he took some risk. I want to criticise the vaccine policy, but I don't want to be lumped in with all the crazy anti-vaxxers. So I'll have 3 jabs, please.
And an awful lot of our listeners will have had the same sort of dilemma. Instinctively, many, many people felt there was something not quite right about the way this vaccine was rushed through. They felt uneasy about it, and they probably particularly felt uneasy about the enormous social pressure that was put on us all. Yeah. To have what is basically a medical intervention, and all medical interventions carry risk. And unfortunately, there is probably no vaccine in the world that doesn't adversely affect somebody.
Sure.
Statistically, it's going to be a tiny number. The thing is that if you coerce, bully the entire population into having a jab, and it was pretty much the entire adult population, and in fact, let's not forget, they also ended up trying to push it on to teenagers and children, which was way off the reservation, way off the reservation of what was ever intended. If you're inoculating on that scale, yeah, then even small statistical rare side effects are going to end up with quite a lot of people dying. One person dying is, of course, far too many and a tragedy. In this case, there were over 80 fatal consequences for people who took the jab.
Yeah, 80 that you know of, Isabel. It's probably a lot more than 80. Let's hear a tiny bit more of this then.
Somebody we knew, I didn't know very well, but my other half knew a little bit, was I think one of the first people to have, he was an NHS clinician.
Right.
And he ended up, he had the jab and he died. And he had a...
Was he a psychiatrist?
Yes, he was.
Yes,
yes,
I mean,
correct.
This was a case that deserved even more attention than it got.
Yep.
You know,
I apologise for the sound quality. There's nothing I can do about it. Occasionally, when I grab a clip, it's the sound is poor quality. It's a Talk Radio issue, not mine. His mic is set up pretty well. Oakeshott's mic isn't set up well, and you get all the time. I can't do anything. Well, I could, but I don't have the time to do anything about it before the programme. So forgive me. It is crap production by Talk Radio. And I imagine they're getting paid well enough to avoid mistakes like these. But
it
anyway.
Could not have been a more classic case of someone who didn't have a load of other health problems.
Yep.
You know, no one could say, oh, well, he's an outlier because, you know, he's enormously obese. Or
they're talking about this psychiatrist who had the jab and died very soon after. And this was early on, listen.
Or something else, you know, he was a doctor of sorts, and it was awful what happened. I remember the case.
Yeah, yeah. And that, but that was way before. That was quite early on, wasn't it, in the vaccination process? And Lisa Shaw, the radio presenter from BBC Newcastle.
And mainstream media would not cover these cases.
Stop now with the mainstream media bollocks. Stop that. Talk radio is mainstream media. And you weren't exactly screaming from the rooftops about these injuries. You just were not. You know, it's amazing the revisionism that is going on at the moment in the media, particularly around talk radio and GB News. Bullshit revisionism. They think we're stupid and that we've lost our memories. I would give credit to Oakeshott for, in 2020, she stood against, as I've already said, any attempt to mandate the jabs. She was good. Well done. But she talked about them being safe at the time and she didn't know that. And they were hardly screaming from the rooftops about their mutual friend who died having received the jab virtually a day or two having had it, and the BBC presenter. They weren't screaming from the rooftops saying, Jesus, maybe we should suspend these jabs. They didn't do that. So this revisionism is driving me a bit mad, really. Andrew Bridgen, who has got probably 2 months left as an MP. I say this now, not sarcastically. I don't know Bridgen at all, and I've nothing against him, and I can't see any negatives to Bridgen asking questions about the safety of the jabs. There are no negatives. I think, well done. You know, he asked very serious questions in Parliament, so I would applaud him for that. But he's a politician, and I'm always suspicious of politicians. But anyway, he did his job in that instance. Did Andrew Bridgen, former Tory, he had the whip removed, meaning he's no longer in the Conservative Party. He now sits as an independent MP. About an hour ago, he posted this clip to his Twitter account. He, at some stage today, stood up in the House of Commons and asked a question to the leader of the House of Commons, Penny Mordaunt. He's posted it. Here it is. Have a listen and see what you think.
Andrew Bridgen.
Madam Deputy Speaker, yesterday, only weeks after admitting to the serious side effects from their product, AstraZeneca withdrew their COVID-19 vaccine worldwide. Like millions in the UK and over 700 million people worldwide, I took the AstraZeneca jab based on the government's assurance that it was safe and effective. I suffered side effects. Now, I know there's very little appetite in this chamber to discuss these matters, but I assure the House there's huge and growing concern from the public about a medical intervention that this House encouraged, coerced, and in some cases mandated people to inject into their bodies. So can we have a statement from the Health Minister on the withdrawal of the AstraZeneca vaccine, why the MHRA, the Medicines and Healthcare Regulatory Authority, failed to act to protect the public interest? Or is it that AstraZeneca withdrew their own product because it was far too safe and effective?
Now, that's pretty reasonable from Andrew Bridgen, isn't it? Would you ask the Health Minister to come before this House and explain what the fuck has gone on with the AstraZeneca jab? We deserve a response. What does she say?
Well, I'm sorry to see the Honourable Gentleman speak like that in this chamber, especially as three speakers on the front bench have raised the issue of conspiracy theories and our combined efforts to push back on them.
Combined efforts to push back on conspiracy theories. She's just produced a document for MPs or would-be MPs. It's a guide. Honestly, I spoke about this on the Papers podcast and on the show yesterday. She's produced a guide for MPs on how to recognise dangerous conspiracy theories and not to get sucked in by them. This woman you're hearing now, Penny Mordaunt, he asked a very lucid question, a very sensible question. They've withdrawn their jab. It's hurt a lot of people. It's killed a lot of people. We deserve answers. Why won't the Health Minister come before the House to answer questions? She says this.
The vaccine he refers to, according to many independent estimates, saved over 6.5 million lives.
Nonsense.
In the first year of use alone, and over 3 billion doses of it were supplied.
They could
globally. He will know, like many other medical products, we don't keep vaccines in, particular vaccines in use permanently since their introduction. Disease and therapies change. vaccines need to be updated. And he knows it's very clear that this has been withdrawn for commercial reasons. It's
bollocks.
It's no longer needed.
Bollocks, it was withdrawn for commercial reasons. What a lie.
And there are two particular vaccines that are used now in our NHS with regard to COVID. The Honourable Gentleman has had several debates on this matter, on excess deaths, and of course people suffering ill effects from taking vaccines. That is a serious issue. It needs to be addressed and their needs need to be served. But that is quite another thing from promoting false information about the effectiveness and safety of vaccines. That vaccine and the people behind it saved millions of lives. There is a chapter in the publication we have spoken about that covers this precise point, and I would encourage the Honourable Gentleman to get a copy.
The publication is the one I just told you about. She's published a guide for MPs on how to avoid conspiracy theories. It's amazing what's happening, isn't it?
And read it and think seriously when he comes to the House, as he does every week, and promotes conspiracy theories, to really think about the consequences of what he is doing.
And then she had a few hear-hears. Wow. This is the Richie Allen Show. It is Thursday's edition. I hope I find you well today. I'm Richie Allen. Time for a tune when we come back. Dean Henderson live on the programme from the Ozarks. Have I got music lined up? I think so. Oh yeah, it's the Pointer Sisters. And a track called Jump. Right, we don't like to do it to the Pointer Sisters, but we'll give him a break. Dean Henderson is a wonderful guy. I mentioned him at the top of the programme. I've known him for years. He is everything. A terrific author, broadcaster, writer, public speaker. You'll find him on Substack. I'll put all the links on the podcast notes later on, but I don't need to because he's been around far longer than me. So he has. He has a wonderful wife, Jill, who's an amazing light worker too. Great people. It's a pleasure to speak to them on this programme. Dean Henderson, welcome back. How the hell are you?
Yeah, it's good. I mean, considering everything, yeah, it's okay, you know. It's just, I mean, it's good to see the kids on the campuses protesting, you know. I haven't seen it since we were doing it back during the Gulf War when I was in my 20s. And we had a lot of protests in this country at that time, and I haven't seen it since then. So, yeah, whatever. George Soros is funding the whole thing, whatever. But, you know, no, he's not. It's just retarded. It's like, you know, it's actually happening. And, you know, I don't know. I just feel like the more of the question is like, you know, we're always talking about what's their plan, what's their next move, what are they going to do next? And it's almost like, how are they going to patch this together now at all? I mean, how is any of this big, great plan of theirs, fourth industrial revolution, third world war, how is this, any of this going to work? Because, and then today, yeah, yesterday, or yeah, you got Biden saying, well, no more weapons to Israel. I mean, I just about fell out of my chair, Richie.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy's been the most pro-Israeli president, Democrat, Republican, doesn't matter. And all of a sudden, and you know he's listening to those kids, okay? So, you know, you can say what you want. Yeah, I'm sure there's some big conspiracy behind that too, but no, it's not. It's actually happening. It's actually happening. And he actually has to listen to these kids because they made a lot of noise, and now they're making noise in Europe too. And people are just sick of it. People aren't down with genocide. It's good to know. It's good to see, right? I mean,
I agree 100%. I don't buy into the it's Soros behind. I don't buy into that either. I like it. I think it's organic. I love what you said there. So Biden is concerned because a lot of younger voters said they would not vote for the Democrats in November, not vote for him over this issue. He comes out and he says, I will withhold weaponry if you proceed into Rafah. That on the face of it seems very positive. Now, look, a guy like me would say, that's not enough, Joe. Why don't you threaten Israel that if you proceed into Rafah, we will sanction you back to the time the universe first began, and we will kick out all of your ambassadors? And I would say not far enough, but you think these are good steps, these are positive moves?
No, agreed. It's not far enough, but it's just a move in the right direction. This just seems like everything's going in the right direction all of a sudden. Like, you know, AstraZeneca's pulling its stuff, and oh, gee, you know, it's commercial reasons. And Russia's just pounding Ukraine now, moving ahead, moving the line ahead every day. And I don't know. I just think there's a lot of things there. Like I say, the question isn't like, what's their big plan? Oh, they're going to put us in a digital currency. You're going to be controlled forever. No, the question is, how long are you assholes able to stay out of jail now? Because it's time's coming close. And we're on to your shit, and we're after you, and we're on offense. We don't play defense because we know a good defense is a good offense. That's your best defense is you stay on offense. We have, and we're waking people up. And the Russians now know that the CIA is behind ISIS because they know now that the thing at the theater that happened was done by Islamists, but they were training Ukraine at these Azov battalion Nazi camps with the help of the CIA, with the help of Burisma, with the help of Hunter Biden's boys, with the help of Kolomoisky, which is Zelensky's handlers, his controller, his oligarch, Petrone. And they know this now. And then the Iranians know this because they're bombing a Israeli ISIS, a camp of ISIS people in Syria that's right next to this. In northern Iraq, Kurdistan, which, you know, Kurdistan has been sort of created. It's on and off. It's always a CIA construct where they, you know, march out the Kurds and take control of an oil area and cause some problems. And so they did that in Kurdistan, and that's where Exxon's got its big oil field at Kirkuk. And so one of the bombings the Iranians did was they bombed the ISIS camp right there in Kurdistan, and it was right next to the Israeli consulate, which is right next to the U.S. embassy. And so they now know, as I've been saying, and a lot of people have been saying and telling for years, researching and finding out, that ISIS is actually literally a construct of Western intelligence, the whole thing, all of it. And they both these big giant countries with big giant weapons know this now. And this is huge. And the Russians are saying, yeah, the Western intelligence was behind this bombing.
Can you explain?
I don't think Westerners understand the change in Russian tenure in the last week.
Yeah.
Quite.
Can we stay? Can we stay with ISIS, Steve?
You know,
can we stay? Hang on. Can we stay with ISIS for a minute? Because I think sometimes you forget that you've got loads of time on this program, so I'm not going to cut you off after 10 minutes. This is important because. Yeah. We've been speaking about this for years. So how does it work then, as far as you understand it? How does Western intelligence agencies create an organization like ISIS? How do they go about it? And who are these guys?
That's easy.
Yeah, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's just money, and it's always come from the Saudis, and it's always been... the charity, the Aga Khan Foundation, is crucial because they fund a lot of these madrasa religious schools all over the world. And the Saudis then start funding it at our behest. And then we recruit, first it was Mujahideen, you know, it was Afghanistan when we claim the Russians invaded Afghanistan, which they never actually did. They only came into Afghanistan after the CIA had a coup, and using the same Islamists already, and tried to overthrow the Tariqi government, which was a socialist government, which was allowing women to, you know, not only not wear burqas, but go to college. And, I mean, they had land reform going on. They had all kinds of good things going on in Afghanistan in the 70s. And we unleashed these right-wing, and they have that's the key is, see, the Saudis are also very right-wing in this whole GCC setup that they have over there. They're kings. They're monarchy, of course. They're the antithesis of revolution. They're counter-revolutionary by their very nature, these people. They're rich people. Okay, billionaires don't want revolutions because they want things to continue under their heel, and they control everything, and they don't want any problems. So that's what we're, so they train these people into political Islam, which is a whole different understanding of things. And it pretty much sets Islam against Christianity and creates this the Crusades. It's a new Crusades. And this was all telegraphed by Samuel Huntington in 1975 paper to the Trilateral Commission called The Clash of Civilizations, which he predicted so presciently, you know, that this was going to happen. Well, right then is when we started creating these political Islamists. Now, we had used them before. We used them in Indonesia to overthrow the Sukarno government, which is also a left-wing socialist government. and we used the right-wing Muslim religion people to overthrow him and put Suharto in his place, a billionaire who worked for Lockheed Martin, essentially. And then we used him in Iran because we headed off the revolution in the oil fields in 79, yeah. Which was headed by the Fayyadin and some very left-wing communist people, and assassinated an ExxonMobil executive, a Texaco executive, and there was Khuzestan, I think it's the region, southern Iran. That was the start of the revolution. So then we saw that. So then we headed that off by bringing the Shah, or bringing the Ayatollah in. And he literally was flown into Tehran with a CIA handler sitting next to him. And we thought we were real cute and we were going to fix it all. We were going to, you know, turn Iran into some counter-revolutionary hotbed. But, you know, since then that hasn't panned out. It's just like with Hamas. They've mellowed out. They've realized their handlers, who they are. And now Iran is fairly, I'd say, left-wing government. I mean, they have a state oil company. They have state everything. And they have a very socialist economy even. So the same happened there. So, but yeah.
Yeah, but hang on, Dean. Hang on. Women are still being dragged into cars and having the shit beaten out of them for not wearing the headscarf.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, you know, I don't know if that, I don't know how much of that's true, Richie. I'd like to see some of that.
You and I are on the same page on so many things. But I've seen this. I've seen this on videos.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's still, there's still problems. You still have these guys. Not defending them at all. I'm just explaining how it works.
I'm not trying to be a smart arse, because what you said earlier, you beautifully explained this. You and I spoke years ago about the country Iran was when Mossadegh was in control. It was a secular country. It was a country where the government was acting in the best interests of its people. And what you've described is chilling, really, that the intelligence agencies were able to go into these Arab nations, into these Middle Eastern nations, and fund crazies to completely to destabilize these countries, to bring about a war, civil wars and revolutions. And then these countries that were doing so well collapsed effectively under this interference. And what you were left with then was Wahhabists that they could point to and say, look at these lunatics. But you created them, you bastards. You created these. Can you tell me this, Dean Henderson? How did the United States, how did Britain, how did Israel get away with doing this for so many decades? The same bloody tactics, country after country. How did they get away with it?
Yeah, it's unbelievable how short people's memories are. You're right. Of course, a lot of it's the Empire Press Union, which, you know, was formed by the Pilgrim Society in Britain, out of which hatched the MI6, the CIA, the MI5, everything, all the intelligence people. They recruited it from the Empire Press Union, from the media, from the newspaper people, right? So this tells you that right from the beginning, the newspapers and the CIA were together. I mean, the media and the intelligence agencies work together in the West. And it's just how it is. It's how it's been for over 150 years now. And they really do. So that's how. I mean, that's the answer to your question. That's how they got away with it, because we kept obfuscating in the media what was actually going on. I mean, to this day, Iran is reported to be some crazy Islamic place, right? I mean, meanwhile, they're the ones fighting ISIS more than any other country in the world. I mean, there's just no doubt about that. That's a fact. There is no country fighting ISIS more than the Iranians, you know, and their ilk. And while we build it up in Syria again, build it up in northern Iraq again, because we use them to destabilize not just any Arab countries, but the Arab countries who are socialists, who are nationalists, who are leftists, anarchists, have a leaning towards nationalization of the oil resource. Just that simple. Just like Gaddafi, who's running Libya now, a bunch of people who have slave auctions, and they're ISIS people too, and who's tearing apart Somalia into three countries still, and now Ethiopia is trying to cut a deal with Somaliland, which isn't even officially a country, recognizable, shouldn't be, but the CIA lopped it off of Somalia because there's oil in that little tip on the Gulf of Aden, and so on and on we go. And again, who's doing that? It's Al-Shabaab. It's an Islamist organization. Who's messing up in Nigeria? Boko Haram, which is kidnapping hundreds of girls. Why? Oil, CIA. I mean, it's just everywhere they go. And this is true. And now what I'm saying, it's very important, is that Russia and Iran as states know this is true. They know this is true now. this is big. And
how big could it be?
It's
then?
The biggest lie of the 20th century. It's probably the biggest lie of the 20th century, Richie. I mean, you know, in 9/11, of course, you could say that's a bigger lie, but that's just part of the same lie, right? It actually perpetuates the bigger lie that, yeah, we have to fear the Muslims and they're dangerous. They're all dangerous people, these Muslims. And, you know, and this Islamophobia that's just blatant, open, official. And we talk about anti-Semitism on these campuses. My God, I mean, the amount of people in this country who just hate Muslims automatically because of this policy.
Yeah, but don't blame them, Dean. Don't blame them. Don't blame them. I'll tell you why. Don't blame them. Look, you hear a lot in the media in Europe about the far right in Ireland and the far right in England and Islamophobia. But they're not, Dean. I've met a lot of these people. They just, they see a huge influx of people coming into their local area, into their village or their community. They see a hotel that was used for various sporting activities, leisure. They see it commandeered and they see a lot of young men. You can't blame them because public services have been decimated in these areas anyway.
They haven't, and they haven't really internalized that Islamophobia that's being preached. But I'm saying it's being preached every day.
It's a psyop.
From the highest officialdom. Yeah, and to try to get us to hate Muslims, and that is just the biggest part of that is you had to create this ISIS. How convenient, you know, think about the beauty of that from their sick point of view, how you can overturn elections, have revolutions, have coups, reinstall kings like they did in Afghanistan, whatever. And at the same time, you can try to turn the Western population against all Muslims. You know, it's just brilliant. So it just shows, again, how the intelligence, it's not about really, you know, the CIA long ago switched from overseas stuff. It's mainly about mind control here now. It's mainly about keeping the Western people as dumb as possible. And so that, along with the Yugoslav conflict, I think are the two biggest lies of our time. Because that was a huge lie, too, because we were told the Serbs were the bad guys and Serbs were the only sane people and the other people were all CIA. And, you know, that's a whole other topic. But, I mean, these are the big lies that they have to tell as an empire to keep their own people in line. But right now, the people are not in line here, as you can see at these campuses.
And it's lovely. It's lovely to see
people
this.
People are tired of it.
What you're describing there is the ultimate. It's the ultimate. I can't think of any greater example of how you can psychologically abuse entire populations. So our, and by our I don't mean our, but the militaries of the West, the Western democracies and their intelligence agencies, they create unimaginable chaos in the Middle East, unimaginable to me because I've never experienced it. They lay waste to cities, to countries. They start insane wars. They fund head choppers like ISIS. They make it impossible for young men and young women to have any sort of a life there. So, naturally, these young men and women, mostly young men because they send the men first, they come into Europe, God love them, we would do the same thing. So they're responsible for this. They send them into Europe, they send them into to Germany, to Italy, to Spain, to Portugal, France, they come into the UK. There's a population then in the UK and Ireland completely unprepared for this because their governments have been destroying public services, wrecking them, running everything down. It's genius when you think about it, isn't it? It's genius. It really is.
You're pounding people on both ends.
Yeah.
And then at the end, the kicker is then you turn them against each other.
Yeah.
You know, and they blame the immigrants, and the immigrants say, oh, what a bunch of crackers. And meanwhile, the whole thing is being orchestrated. These countries are being systematically destroyed. Both cultures are being destroyed because you're destroying European culture with this massive influx of non-Europeans. And then the home countries, don't forget, are being destroyed. Because these people are being uprooted from their families and their clans, and so that culture is being destroyed. So it all gets thrown together, and that's the plan, of course, as we know, is to create this global monoculture of kind of zombie tech people who don't have a moral compass or just take orders, just pretty much repeat whatever the line of the day is. But it's just not working. That's the great thing. It's just not working. It's just I'm seeing an uprising too against the tech. I'm seeing Tesla cars, used Tesla cars, going for like the just crashing in value.
Yeah,
like the used EV market is just toast. You know, because people just like, you know, fuck you, man. Drive 200 fucking miles and then what? Sit for an hour Yeah. That's ridiculous, man.
It's ludicrous.
Especially
yeah.
in America.
Especially in America.
I drive through two. That's right. That's more than that to see my family here. I mean, so, you know, it's all just kind of funny. I don't know. I'm just thinking, like I said earlier.
I love your optimism.
Like we're kind of definitely on the ropes here. And so we just got to keep it up. And that's all. Just keep it up, man.
I love this optimism. I love it. I love this EV story. I mean, isn't it farcical? You know, one of my bucket list ideas. I've always wanted to, because I've been to the States a couple of times and I didn't spend too long there. I'd love to drive Route 66. I'd love to drive in the deep south. I just love to be there. Can you imagine they say to you, come and drive Route 66. It'll only take you 6 months, you know, in your EV. Because, as you said, you've got to stop every 2 hours to charge up. I love the optimism you're expressing. Can I just remind our listeners? You're listening to one of the most important authors that I've ever interviewed on this programme, Dean Henderson. He's more than an author. He's an incredibly brilliant political analyst and historian. Illuminati Agenda 21, Royal Bloodline, Wetico and the Great Remembering, the Federal Reserve Cartel, Big Oil and their bankers in the Persian Gulf. These are some of the most important books of all time. And it was David Icke that said to me 15 years ago, do you know about Dean Henderson? I said, I never heard of him. I bet he never heard of me. And he didn't. He said, start reading his books, Richie. And I did start reading his books. You'll find them on Substack, deanhenderson.substack.com. Do subscribe to him. I love this optimism because you've opened up a discussion today that I've never had on this programme. And that is because I have a lot of listeners who are a bit pessimistic, fair enough. That's their right. And they imagine that the bad guys can control everything. And I think there is some belief in the independent media. There is some belief that they can't be stopped, that, you know, they're behind everything. They manage to manipulate everything and it can't be stopped. But you're saying they're fuck-ups just as much as anybody else and they make mistakes and they have to be seized upon. And you think they've made a cock-up with Gaza and you think they're making a big cock-up in Ukraine. And this might be a huge opportunity, Dean, to awaken or alert even more people.
Yeah, I do. I know it's happening. It's just, you can feel it happening. Part of what they have to do and part of the reason, and I mean, I understand why people are pessimistic, you know, but that pessimism, you have to understand that the establishment always is so in that too. They're always so in this tale of omnipotence to us. That's probably the primary thing they have to do. I mean, if you think about, you know, the guy behind the projector, you know, behind the screen, like the Wizard of Oz, this tiny little shriveled up old guy, and he has to project this huge, oh, I'm omnipotent. And well, that's what they do. And so then even the people who meanwhile, who are trying to deconstruct things, take things apart, we tend to fall into that trap, I think, too, of just being overly pessimistic and thinking they told me they're omnipotent, so they are. I mean, you know, you and I, our IQ compared to Gates or whatever, or compared to Musk, come on, man. I mean, you don't think we have a chance? You don't think we have a chance to outthink these fuckers? Of course we do. And we got them by the balls, really. But it's just like boing, boing. We're just going to bounce them around and people hate them. People hate these people now. And why shouldn't they? So, okay, now what do we do? Politics. We don't know. I mean, that's the next thing. It's like how much of this are we going to have to do and how far has this got to spread? And maybe it'll just have to. Maybe it'll just have to. Maybe it'll just have to spread beyond these campuses. I don't know. But, you know, the fact that Biden responded to that, I don't know. That's pretty big because that hasn't, honestly, another thing about that is that hasn't really happened before.
No.
Like, we didn't get that from Bush when we marched in the Gulf War at all. I mean, it was just more like spit on us, tell us we're traitors. At that time, it was the Republicans who were there. Well, they're coming back to their true Nazi roots here, as you can see in the U.S., actually, the Republicans, because they're all behind Israel. Yeah, Ted Cruz wants to martyr his second child for Netanyahu, it sounds like, or whatever. But, you know, it's coming back. So, but no, we didn't get any of that. I mean, in Vietnam, they didn't get any of that, really. Although eventually they did pull out. And you could say, well, yeah, they had a lot to do with that. So, okay, maybe they did. Maybe it's the last time you could say that happened. Anyway, was that a president actually responded to protests, you know, in the U.S. And I think it probably was Vietnam. And that took a while. I mean, that was a lot of protests and a lot of years of protests until finally. And really, I would argue that was more of a military defeat at Dien Bien Phu, you know, more than anything. more than the protest. But here you saw Biden actually respond to those kids, and that's shocking. So I don't know. Somebody slipped him some acid. I don't know.
Well, he might have been slipped a psychedelic because he's obviously impaired, but that's a conversation for another day. Let me read a few quick comments for you. Emma says, hi, Emma. I think the mysterious they want to put us off looking into the true message of Islam. I read the Quran recently, says Emma, and it blew my mind, to be honest. I understand now why we were taught to fear the Muslims. That's Emma. This one is from Patricia, who says, is it wrong to suggest that the Zionist-controlled media in the West will always be against anything Muslim-related and will always be in favour of anything Jewish-Israeli-related? The media is a lost cause, I think Patricia is saying. At least the print and broadcast media in the West. I think she's right. Just hold that thought for a minute, Dean. Kay asks, could you ask Dean how Americans are feeling these days about the COVID vaccines? Well, America is a massive place, but I imagine Dean will have some insight into how people are feeling about the vaccines. Grace Ann says, Richie, we all sin and we all die. The Bible isn't specific about specific people who die because of sin. We all do it, and death is inevitable for us all. That's in relation to something we were speaking about earlier on. But some interesting comments there about the media being a huge barrier, really, which it is. And I know it might be an obvious thing to say, but it is. It's massive. And Emma's saying, you know, read the Quran, got the true message of the religion, blew my mind, and now I understand why we were taught to fear it. I mean, I've travelled in countries like Morocco and places. I've seen Muslims. I knew a lot of Muslims in Manchester when I lived there. And my overwhelming feeling about the people I knew and know are positive feelings. And I took a lot out of, you know, the culture and the way they live their lives and the things that they hold dear to themselves. So that's really interesting. Have you ever read the Quran or attempted to read it? I guess you have done.
No, I have not actually, but I've seen passages from it, and I know that especially the Shia Muslims they're activists. I mean, that book tells them to wait for heaven. You know, I mean, to fight on this earth against injustice more so, I would say, than Christianity over the years has been convoluted into. So it's true. It's true. There is a reason we fear Islam beyond the obvious, and that, I think that's a good point. Yeah, and on the COVID thing here, I mean, well, I don't know, but we had a 3% booster rate last I heard or whatever. And so, I mean, they might as well pack up their shit and go home, too. I think that's over. So
3%,
That's good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and people have woke up to that. I mean, they're not going to do it again. And I feel bad for the ones that already took those shots. But
Dean, what do you think of the pandemic treaty, which countries are looking likely to sign at the end of this month in Geneva, which will give the World Health Organization control over dealing with pandemics in the future? I mean, that's scary shit, that, isn't it? This thing in Geneva.
Pretty sure you know what I think of it, but yeah. I mean, it's scary. And I mean, that's the whole thing. We got to reverse this whole globalization thing still. It's unraveling at the edges, you know. Countries are becoming more nationalistic, not just the U.S., but a lot of countries, China, a lot of countries. So the whole trade thing's kind of, it's granted to us a bit of a slowdown. But, you know, we got to get out of the World Health Organization. We got to get out of the WTO. We got to get out of all these supranational, you know, it has to become where the World Economic Forum people are just marginalized again and just not even taken seriously. Just you rich people go have your thing at Davos and you drink some children's blood or whatever you do, and then just go home and shut up instead of trying to run the world like overtly with your people, because they are just overt right now. But so that's the chance we have to see it, though. They've never been out of the closet more. They've never been so patronizing. They've never been, you know, telling us these things, what we're supposed to do, and
yeah, it's out in the open,
in the field of what their expertise is, like Gates. And yeah, it's out in the open. So this is our opportunity to see it. Just like Israel, you know, yeah, it's brutal. It's horrible. God, it just gut-wrenching. But, you know, they had to see what Israel really was. I mean, I knew what they were. You knew what they were. I I've been around enough Israelis. They're racist. They think they're better than other people. That's just the way they've been raised in Israel. It has nothing to do with Judaism. It's just they actually just think they're better than everybody else.
Can I ask you a question on that?
Jewish, but Israeli people are better. See, not Jewish, but Israeli people are better. And that's a problem. That is the problem. It's apartheid. You can't just, you know, yeah, anyway.
Can I ask you a question? Yeah, let me ask you a question on that. I remember Norman Finkelstein. He used to come on with me quite regularly. And a documentary was made some years ago about Norman and the trouble he had for over his criticism of Israel. And he spoke to me one evening very eloquently about the programming that goes into young Israeli kids in schools. And I really do mean this when I say this. I'm not being devil's advocate. I really do mean this. What chance do children have growing up in Israel if they're programmed to believe this awful shit from the time they are crawling around on their hands and knees? They're, in some way, they're victims as much. Maybe not as much, but they're victims, aren't they? I mean, what they have victims, chance, do they?
Yeah, I agree. It's hard everywhere. It's hard in America, okay, too. It's hard in Europe, too, right? But I think it's especially hard in Israel. And it takes a special person to bust out of that. So it's definitely systemic. It's being caused by a certain state at a certain time in history. It has nothing to do with religion. It has everything to do with the Zionist project, which is the New World Order and the bloodline control of it, and the family control that, again, they're coming out of the closet now, and the Khan families everywhere. I mean, the Shah families everywhere. They're just telling us what to do on TV and in America anyway. You see Khan, your own London mayor there. So yeah, I mean, they're here. They are, and so that's what we got to remember. We can't hate Jews. Obviously, it's just stupid. I mean, that's stupid. You know,
of course it is. And Jews have nothing to do with it.
You know, right? And so, but to criticize Israel, that's just all different. And that distinction has to be made, I think, really more and more. This is just a rogue state. Okay. This is nothing to do with any kind of what happened in the past or with their Holocaust or with, forget about all that. This is a rogue state. You can't do that. You just can't do what they're doing and get away with it. And Jesus, you know, so the whole world knows that now, I think. But yeah, now it's just kind of this, I don't know. We're going to see what happens. We're going to see how the European Union responds now to, the statement of Biden. You know, we got to see what they say about it. But you know, the people in charge, obviously that's the problem, Richie, is okay. There's all this awareness coming around and yeah, in a sense we have them on the ropes. We know who they are. We've identified them. We're going after them at every front. But on the other hand, politically, how do we change the system? You know, how do we, you can't vote anybody in to change it because they're all, it's money, money, money everywhere. And so, yeah, as I say, it just may be a matter of people just staying out in the streets and protesting, and maybe that is how we end this, man. I mean, it probably is. You
know, I dream, I dream about a day when, like we saw during the initial lockdown protests, like hundreds of thousands of people went to Trafalgar Square and Leicester Square in London, the Mall. My dream would be that they divert and they walk down Downing Street and they basically tell the inhabitants of that street, number 10, number 11, your time is up, you've got to leave. That's how, it's the only way I see it changing. I want to ask you a question. This is fascinating to me. By the way, dear listener, you're listening to Dean Henderson, brilliant researcher, writer, analyst, former candidate himself. You have done as much as anybody to document the activities of the royal families of the world through the centuries. Nobody better than you to write about this, and I urge our listeners to go and buy your books. I really do. What do you think is going on with the British royal family at the moment, the Crown Corporation? This is fascinating to me. Your man Charles, who recently assumed the throne, has got cancer. His daughter-in-law, the Princess of Wales, has cancer. She's hardly been seen. He's estranged from his son, Prince Harry, the Duke of Sussex, who always looks to me, and I don't spend too much time watching the royal family. He always looks to me, and this is pure fantasy on my part now, he looks like he'd love to spill the beans about what he feels might have happened to his mother. It's really interesting, that royal family at the moment in London. What's going on with it? I don't know if you have any thoughts on it.
Yeah. Well, it is interesting. And Harry's over there right now for the Invictus Games or whatever they call it. And he's not even going to see, not even going to check in on the old man. So it's pretty interesting. So I think he might be right about that. And he probably would love to, and maybe he will. I mean, that's what we got to hope, it goes that far. But I do think there's this energy in the world, and the energy is against them, and it's just, maybe it makes people sick when enough people just hate you. It maybe just makes you sick. But I also do think that obviously they're grooming William, and maybe as soon as they can get Charlie out of the way, the better, because they got big plans for that kid. And I don't know, so maybe his wife isn't the right one that they can, I don't know, maybe they're taking her out too, or trying to, or and just focusing on William. But William's definitely, I mean, he's almost like turning into this villain before our eyes, you know. Yeah, a lot of different weird kind of, I don't know, little ways, or if you notice it or if you don't. But yeah, but that's, yeah, it is interesting, and I think it's good. I mean, I think it's, I mean, I hate for anybody with cancer, but it's just like this bunch is bad, and like you say about Downing Street, you can say the same thing, Buckingham Palace, you know, march to Buckingham Palace and just tell those carpetbaggers they got to go, because you're tired of paying their way.
Time is up, yeah. Yeah.
Just that simple.
You're right, because I think the notion that the world could be changed through general elections, I think it's just, that's bunk now. It's never, ever going to happen, because it's so sewn up. And again, it's ground we've covered over the years. It's never boring, because it's important. Like, I have a lot of listeners now. They're lovely people, and they will tell me, they disagree with me. They reckon that at local level, they can make a difference. Now, I have a really good friend. I think you've spoken to him over the years. Mark Windows, a really good guy, Mark. I know you've spoken to Mark. Mark believes, and he's a very smart guy, so I pay attention to him. He thinks at local election level, like getting into your local council, getting on the board of the local council, the local authority, that's where you can make changes, because this is a global agenda, but it's being rolled out locally. What do you feel about that, getting into local politics and trying to disrupt?
Yeah, that's true. No, that's really good thing for people to do, and because I think he's right. Yeah, the more local it is, the more accountable people are held, because you go to church with those people, or you see them at the restaurant. I mean, when you know people personally, they're held accountable, you know. And that's just the nature of it. And that's part of the whole reason we have to end this globalization. We do have to get back to a much more local control of things, obviously. And beginning of that is to just become a nation state again. That's like whole. It's not a corporation of the crown, right? And that's just, not a stock traded on the, New York and London exchanges. And get our sovereignty back, and there's so many things we got to do to do that. I mean, I don't even think politics is so far down the pole right now. But like, we got to nationalize our central banks, for one thing, still, and we haven't. And ours is Federal Reserve, uses the Bank of England, but they say that's nationalized, the Bank of England supposedly, but I don't know. Needs checking into. I doubt it. And I don't know. Just there's so many things, but just taking control back from these bloodlines is still projects. I mean, it's a long slog. They've had us by the you-know-what for a long time. In my reckoning, like I say, 8,500, 9,000 years, something like that, and enslaved us, literally just came here and enslaved us and live in castles now and watch us work for them and do the Commonwealth or whatever, this giant sucking sound where the third world just gets all its resources sucked out by these billionaire trillionaire people and their hedge fund managers and their lackeys like Soros and Mark Malik Brown and whoever. And it's got to end. So it's the gig's up, people. I don't know. I think everyone's pretty tuned into it now globally. I feel like there's been, like in Africa, there's just so many countries now, Chad, Mali, Sudan, and upheaval and turning towards the Russians, turning away from the West, again, like they did kind of in the 60s, and that's been a long time, right? But that's the way it went then, too. And they saw that the Soviet Union was their better chance. So most countries in the 60s and maybe even 70s were Marxist countries in Africa, like the majority, by far. It never happened in South America like that. There was patchwork of things going on, but now South America, you've got a lot of, you got the guy in Uruguay who's good, in Chile, you've got a upheaval, constant upheaval in Peru that's promising. You got Bolivia with Morales, you got Maduro, you got Colombia now with a left-wing president for the, I mean, that's just, again, I want to fall on my chair. I mean, going after the cartels, trying to do a single-payer health care in Colombia for the people. Having a treaty with the ELN is high priority, making peace for finally. But again, they forced that peace, the ELN did, and FARC, and you just can't deny that. You can't deny that sometimes you got to bring out the guns. And, I mean, look what the Houthis have done. The Houthis did what they did before the kids got out in the university campuses. And sometimes, I mean, you just any means necessary. I guess that's kind of my thing.
No, I get you on South America. The thing about South America is it is never reported on the UK news. I cannot remember the last time. I can remember. The last time I heard or read a story about that continent was they were talking about the terrible conditions in the jails in Ecuador because they're rounding up all of these gangs and they're chucking them into jail. Right. But they don't talk about what goes on there. And it's fascinating. I mean,
yeah, it's pathetic coverage.
Oh, it's pathetic.
Well, so, then there's another good...
Go on.
Yeah. I was just going to say about Ecuador. You brought up Ecuador as another example. So, you know, Ecuador was... that's where Julian Assange, you know, took refuge, was in the Ecuadorian embassy in London. And at that time, you had Rafael Correa, who, again, a socialist, Bolivarian socialist, whatever, good friends with Chavez. And so what do? We go into Ecuador. Behind the IMF and basically say, you know, this is the way it's going to be, cause problems. We install this right-wing junta, and that's who's running Ecuador. And the Mexicans just cut off relations with them completely the other day with Ecuador. Mexicans are doing good, too, under Obrador. He's like, fuck you Nazis, man. You take our guy into your – I mean, they had an opposition candidate, Ecuador, took refuge in the Mexican embassy in Quito, and the Ecuadorians just stormed the embassy. Just, you know, you can't do that. So no. They did it. So Mexico cut relations. Well, then Colombia cut relations. Nicaragua cut relations with Ecuador now. And so, no, you've got a whole thing going on down there. And Ecuador is marginalized. I mean, and look at them. I mean, yeah, look at the disgrace. Their candidates are being assassinated, you know, before the elections. And their jails are filled with criminals because they, again, you know, the CIA is on a roll. Hey, here we go. Let's move the Colombian, move the coca paste out of Bolivia in this direction. Or, I mean, how hard is it? Set up some labs in Ecuador instead of in Colombia because there's a left-winger there now. He don't like us. That's exactly what's going on. And that all just go off the coast. It'll go up to Acapulco, and then you'll get the cartels, again, the CIA people, moving that stuff. That's how it works. That's reality.
It is reality. You know, it's absolutely, it's brilliantly explained. And this is how, when you have Bolivarian socialists over the years, and I've bored my listeners to tears talking about Allende in Chile and what they did to mm-hmm. him after he nationalized the copper mines there, after he took all the land back from the prospectors in America. Absolutely. And what did they do when these guys, because Chavez did was he turned Venezuela around. He turned it into a country that worked for the people of Venezuela. So what did they do? They sanctioned the bejesus out of him. And this is what they're always able to do, right? Is use economic sanctions to show that, well, socialism doesn't work. Look, inflation has gone through the roof. Well, of course it has, numbnuts. After what you've done to it, you know what I mean? It's the same story, isn't it? Yeah. Over and it's over funny. Again, yeah.
It's just humorous. Yeah, I mean, it is, and it's over and over and over. But, again, like, you're catching up, it feels like. And now, I mean, you got a country like Colombia, who, by the way, also expelled the Israeli ambassador and cut relations with Israel. Colombia did. I mean, it's just crazy because Colombia, for so long, has been this corrupt country. It's kind of our go-to, you know, it's been the CIA's go-to place, you know. In Latin America, and all of a sudden, whoa, it's gone. Honduras, too, by the way. Honduras, yep, oh, she's gone. So, I mean, it's just one by one. You know, you get fits of starts. You get this crazy guy in Argentina now, this baby Trump, you know, and he's bad, you know, but he's also catching a lot of hell, and I don't think he'll last long. But, yeah, I mean, it's like the blockade thing, you know, with the Houthis. And so they tried to put this big alliance, international, you know, international coalition together. And they came up with UK, the U.S., Argentina, and the Netherlands, I think it was. So that's the four countries that were, you know, Nazi enough, I guess, to send and support a genocide, a little genocide down the road, you know, by helping it out. So that didn't work. So I don't know. I just see the whole world kind of coming. I don't know. It's they're losing control. It just seems like they're losing control of every single thing.
By the way, but sorry to interrupt, Dean. You know that. Well, I think you've already said it. Actually, I think you did say it. You did, in fact, say it. I am listening to you. Petro has got his problems. They're saying that there were financial irregularities during the campaign and all of this. And I can't say it's untrue because I don't know. But I just look at what he did. I look at what did he do. He did what Allende did. Allende took land back and gave it to peasant farmers. What did Petro do, Gustavo Petro? He did the same thing. He figured out that how could it be right that 80% of the workable land is owned by a tiny, tiny group of people, incredibly wealthy right. people, many of them obviously from overseas. And he said no. And this is what happened. So the Western media goes into overdrive then, and it's sick. It's sick. Yeah, it really is sick. Yeah.
Yeah. But at some point, when there's enough of those people down there, oh, Paraguay's another one. Paraguay has a progressive government. That's another one. It's hard to believe because they used to be, you know, lined up with Canada. Like when the Nazis were smuggled to Argentina, you know, Paraguay was this place. I mean, Klaus Barbie hit out there even for a while. And they were really right-wing and now. So, but that's the thing. You get a critical mass of countries against these assholes, and pretty soon it won't matter. And that's kind of what I see going on. I don't really, you know, the end of this thing isn't going to come from internal dissent. I mean, it'll help. Don't get me wrong. It helps. Keep it up. But the end of this is going to come internationally, and it probably will be an economic collapse of the Bretton Woods system. And it's going to be when enough people are able to see that, okay, actually, yeah, we've got sanctioned, you know, you sanctioned the shit out of us. But just like with Russia set it up and has it set up to where it backfired against the West. And the same thing could happen, you know, with sanctioning all these other countries. Or how many countries are you going to sanction at some point? You know, you've got, I don't know, it was like 75 countries signed on to that South Africa genocide thing, I think, in The Hague. 75 countries. You're going to sanction all them now? You know, were the ADL going to go after all those people in every single news station in every single country and call them anti-Semites? And, oh, that makes me cry when you call me that. And, I mean, are you scared of that? I mean, these people got nothing left. And that's what I'm saying. It's falling apart. It's all being exposed. Every single lie, every single thing. And the only question, is how it's going to end. It's just how is this going to end? It's going to end. But how's it going to end?
How's it going to end?
You know, peacefully. Right? Yeah.
Please God, it will be peacefully. The thing that upsets me more than anything is it's not often that I bump into somebody who will even have heard of the show. You know, you know what I mean. The show does well. You have listeners, but they're scattered to the four winds of the world, and you'll be the same on. You've got readers all over the world, so it's not often that you bump into somebody. But when I bump into people occasionally and they say, Asher, it's all a bit mad, the stuff on your radio show, it's a bit crazy. The thing that upsets me more than anything is they don't know about the things that were achieved in Latin America by people like Bolivar, by people like Allende, by Chavez. They don't know what they did for their own people. They don't know about the educational reforms, the agrarian reforms. They've no idea. They have no idea that the International Monetary Fund came in and said, right, nobody is allowed to buy your oil. Nobody can buy your copper. We're going to fuck you. And you're going to feel like it was an elephant doing the fucking, by the way. And we're going to teach you. And we're going to teach every other country not to stand up to us. And it works because as great as Chavez was, You just can't stop. There's nothing you can do when they squeeze you financially and say, nobody buys your oil, nobody buys your agricultural products, nobody trades with you, fuck you, you don't stand up to us, this is what happens. You know, it pains me when I meet people and they don't know any of this. They've never heard of John Perkins, Confessions of an Economic Hitman. They don't know this shit went on, you know? What do you do about that?
No, they washed out history. And along with that, political theory, like an understanding of political theory, like, okay, there's these options, this is politics, there's these options, this is economics. Like capitalism and communism, that's economic systems, right? So this is different from politics, and here's politics over here. They don't even understand that they have these different ways they can look at the world. They don't even understand how another people could look at the world a whole different way or through a whole different economic system maybe, or maybe a mixed economy where you actually have the, you know, you're actually enough of an adult to say maybe we should have a little bit of this and a little bit of that, which is really the way to go if you ask me, and how it's going to work and how it has worked in places like Norway, for example, the richest country in the world, highest standard of living in the world for its people. They have a mixed economy. So there's other examples, but this is the thing, the political theory part got washed out. Like they didn't want people talking about that anymore. Like when I got educated with my master's, so-called educated, I mean, political economy was where it was called. It's called political economy. I mean, that was what I was interested in. That was a specialty. And back then it was Richard Barnett, and it was a lot of left wing people, and that's where they were. That's the field they wanted. And it's who controls the world, basically. Who controls the companies? What percentage of the copper coming out of Australia, you know, is BHP Billiton, and, you know, these kind of things. And it's important. And how can you understand the world without understanding who controls the economy of the world? But it's just, I don't know. They hide it now so much more, it seems like, from the kids, and they hide the theories too. They don't want you to understand how Chavez thought. They don't, what books he read. They don't want you to understand any of that. Obviously, but this is bread and circuses for the people, yeah, right? Yeah. It's just the old Freemason trick, you know, just keep them distracted, and they don't need to know that stuff. We'll take care of it for them, you know.
Keep them distracted with culture wars, keep them distracted with mass migration, keep them distracted with women can have a penis and all of this fucking nonsense.
Get them all lathered up one side or the other on that. Yeah. And just, leave them there, leave them hanging. No, they're brilliant at that. And that's a big part of the PSYOP for this bloodline is just, again, divide and conquer. Always pit the little people against the little people, you know, and never talk about class. Like this whole woke movement, obviously there's no discussion of class in the whole thing. And so what's woke about that if you don't even talk about who runs the world? I mean, if you don't even talk about like who controls those bananas you bought this morning and who made the money off of that. And then how much cocaine was in the bottom of that banana boat. From United Fruit coming into Baltimore Harbor, since according to the DEA, that's most of where our cocaine comes from, is on United branch ships into Baltimore Harbor, last I heard. So it's just keep people stupid in essence. And that's just an old trick. I mean, that's as old as the hills, man. That's what goes so far.
You know what?
Back.
You always throw a grenade in at the very end. This thing about the ship in Baltimore, you've just thrown a grenade at me.
Right?
Wow.
I know,
and of course now you see this is why he's very clever, Dean. He makes sure that he gets invited back. So he throws a little cliffhanger in at the end about the ship in Baltimore. That's fascinating. And the cocaine. I love this. That's my angle. Come here and I tell you, we've got exactly 2.5 minutes left. So let's go out where we came in. Final word to you. You think recent events are far more cause for optimism than people think. Finish with that point. And deanhenderson.substack.com, read his books, please, folks. Support this man. His books are incredibly readable. They are brilliant. They have documented centuries of how the cabals have brought us to where we are today. deanhenderson.substack.com. Final word to you, pal, and be sure and give Jill a hug for us and say hello to her later on as well. Final word, Dean, go ahead.
All right, will do, Richie. Thanks for having me. Also, first of all, I just want to say to support Richie too, man, because he does, I mean, if he don't exist, then you don't get to hear stuff like this. And He is a lot of expenses. He's got a lot more expenses and all this than I got, man. So before you support me, you support him first, okay? And, you know, it's just, I don't know. I just do see we're coming to a reckoning, and we always knew we'd come to this. I think most of us always had a feeling, okay, this can't go on much longer. And we're getting to that point where, yeah, it's not going to go on much longer. So now we got to start thinking about how are we going to do it on the other side? And people just need to get more educated. And like Richie said, study your history. Learn about Latin America. Learn about these great leaders. Learn about Bomadine, who was a great leader from Algeria. Learn about Patrice Lumumba in the Congo before that place got turned into a multinational mining cartel haven of genocide. You know, learn about what happened in Mozambique and what happened in Angola. The revolutions there that were inspired by Roots Reggae, Bob Marley, Peter Tosh. I mean, crazy, right? And that happened. And so that happened. And this is what can happen is if people are proactive instead of reactive and make great music, write great books, do great research, tell people the truth. We have a lot of potential to unlock here, the human species, right? That hasn't been unlocked, and we've been enslaved and we've been dumbed down, and it's not our fault. Now we're waking up, and now we gotta be proactive. That's the key. Don't be reactive, be proactive in your whole life. Like, you make things happen. You know, don't be a spectator. You wanna watch a basketball game, go play some basketball. Okay, then you can watch a game. But, you know, just be proactive, because that's how things change. And don't buy into this garbage that they're omnipotent, there's nothing we can do, we're at their mercy. And now we're just kind of waiting to see what happens, because anybody waiting to see what happens, it's not going to be a good something that happens, because you got to make it happen. And so I'm real proud of these kids. I just want to say again, at the universities who are standing up for the Palestinians, and man, just gives an old man like me some hope, you know?
Brilliant, Dean. And you'll know that Trinity College in Dublin, great educational institution, it basically agreed to these students' demands and agreed to divest away from companies that
I
are
heard that. That's great.
So there you go. There's change. There's a bit of change.
So,
well said, mate. Dean, lovely to have you back, pal. Really was. Thanks so much. Have a great weekend, and I look forward to next time, as always. Thanks,
right,
Dean.
On, Richie. Hey. Yeah.
Go right ahead.
Sounds good. Take care. Bye-bye.
Cheers, Dean. Bye for now. I thought he was going to come back with something. There. Right, that's pretty much it for me. All that's left for me to do is remind you there will be a Papers podcast online tomorrow. The Papers podcast, it usually drops, you like that, around about 7:30 a.m. It is what it sounds like. It's just a bloody review of the newspapers. I am back on Sunday with Sunday Morning Melodies. I'm so looking forward to that. It's been away for about 5 weeks or thereabouts. So that's Sunday, this coming Sunday, the 12th. It's the 12th of May. It's bloody warm in this studio, I tell you. I'm reluctant to put the aircon on, not because I'm stingy or because I'm trying to cut back on costs, even though it is expensive, to be honest. But it doesn't do the vocals any good at all. I like to put it on for a few minutes before coming on air, and then just kind of sweat it out, you know, during the programme. But it's been particularly warm here in the Northwest over the last couple of days. Brilliant. Thank you. Seamus has been on. Hi, Seamus. He says, Richie, I hope Dean comes back. He says, let's hope so. And then Dean says, strangely, he says, this week has seemed like the beginning of a long goodbye with you having quality guests on, he says. Hope I'm wrong, says Seamus. No, there's nothing. There's no long goodbye at all. Far from it. It's the opposite, Seamus. I'm not going anywhere. I have no plans to do anything other than do this show Monday to Thursday and the other shows. No, I'm not going anywhere. No, no, not at all. Maybe last week, I did mention last week there was an issue with support, but that has changed in recent days, and I'm really glad about that. So no plans to go anywhere. I'll be here if you want me Monday to Thursday at 4 o'clock, and then the newspaper podcast as well. All right, well, look, have a good weekend then, whatever it is you're doing. I hope you enjoy it. As I said, papers tomorrow, the music show on Sunday. I've already got some pretty good guests. They're always good, I think, but that's just me. I'm biased. Lined up for next week. So the Richie Allen Show will return on Monday at 4 o'clock, but you'll hear from me between now and then. Thank you so much to the great Dean Henderson and for his kind words. Do go to deanhenderson.substack.com. Again, I cannot recommend highly enough that you pick up one of his books. They are terrific. They are brilliant. Until next time then, from your BBG, it is Sloan Tommel, which means bye for now.